Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. It is Canada's only campus-produced radio show that talks strictly about hockey. Glad to have you along, everybody. Well, we're back in studio tonight, where, unlike last week, where I was in the middle of an arena to do the show, which is fun. I had a good time at the 2020 Female World Sports School Challenge. We'll talk about that in a little bit. With me to my left, sitting directly to my left, is the editor, sports editor of the Manitoban, and one of our favorite guests, Jason Bajak. Jason, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I was teaching a class today and ran over here. So
how did the teaching go for you today?
Pretty good. They just did a quiz, so I was just running around answering questions here and there and trying to make people laugh.
There you
as
go.
I normally do.
Well done. Well done. A little taught with humor is a lesson retained, right?
Exactly.
There you go. I like that. That's a smart idea. Pretty prominent song to start off with, as everybody recognizes Courage by the Tragically Hip. It would have been Gord Downie's 56th birthday today, for those that aren't aware. And in this video, if you're not a music video kind of guy, kind of person, Gord Downie wears a Boston Bruins sweater in it the entire time. Not that I'm any affiliation to Boston, but a little hockey tie-in right there to bring everything together in terms of Gord's birthday, the song, and the video. So there we go. So happy birthday, unfortunately, to a guy who's no longer with us, who we certainly would like to have with us, because he's, again, probably one of Canada's most famous musicians by any means, but happy birthday to Gord Downie, and certainly good to see him honoring his heritage with the hockey sweater on anyway.
I mean, wrong city, wrong country,
yeah, I mean,
but we'll let it slide.
I mean, he was a Kingston guy, and Kingston does wear, the same color. So, I mean, maybe that's the tie-in for him.
Next jersey.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be nice, but you can only do so much, right? I want to bring up the fact that yesterday was National Girls and Women in Sports Day. And I think that, and again, I mean, people can say, oh, you're a women's hockey guy. Of course, you're going to bring that up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring up the fact, though, that this isn't about hockey. This is about all sports.
Yeah.
And I want to go over, again, for people that don't know, I think, about a lot of the sports, like, just sort of fades to the background. We don't really think about it. There are a ton of women that we need to maybe give a shout out to, because let's start off with the obvious, who set the record this past week, at least within the last week. Christine Sinclair of Team Canada Soccer, who now holds the all-time most goals ever scored in international competition by either man or woman. Christine Sinclair, a Canadian, holds that record.
Like that, and you think about the scorers that exist in soccer, that, you know, a sport that's existed for so long.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And how she, like, in our lifetime, that we get to see an athlete so amazing that just comes through and just does it. Like, that speaks to her skill and her longevity in the sport, that she's been there for
20 years now with that team. She started at 16. She's now 36. Over 20 years has racked up, from what I can recall anyway, 186 international goals.
And this is a Canadian team that, you know, for the last few years has been incredibly competitive, and she's been a major part of that.
And I mean, let's not forget, I mean, a couple Olympic medals as well in terms of
easily could have gone to the women's FIFA World Championship, the finals, could have gone to the gold medal at the Olympics. You know, certain things happen, but we're not going to talk about that either.
But Christine Sinclair, that entire women's team, I mean, the work that they've put in, I mean, needs to be mentioned. Let's mention a couple others. Bianca Andreescu, I mean, who has literally put Canadian tennis back on the map after Bouchard and her big run in terms of one tournament. So, I mean, tennis is strong on the women's side as well. Brooke Henderson, never going to forget about how good she is. I mean, from Laurie Kane to Brooke Henderson and the evolution of Canadian golf on the women's side. Clara Hughes, Cindy Klassen, who both call Winnipeg home.
Yep.
I mean, speed skating alone, better off because of them than not. Susan Auk, who is also Canadian in terms of a Winnipeg name as well. Tessa Virtue, who has won, I don't know how many medals. I mean, she probably has more gold in her house than most jewelry stores do, but, I mean, huge on her. I mean, swimming into the pool, Penny Oleksiak. I mean, Kelsey Waugh, who goes to the Manitoba.
I was going
to
mention Kelsey.
Like, we're talking about more. Kia Nurse, the entire women's basketball program, who has just been lights out. At least they show up for games, where some of our Canadian NBA players don't.
I feel like you're calling some people out there.
You know what? I will. Yeah. And I will call them out, because it's nice that the professional women's side shows up for games for their country.
They care. They really care.
I mean, unlike, I mean, a guy who got traded today, who's now a Golden State Warrior, who has never worn the jersey past, like, age 17.
Yeah.
Like, thanks for nothing, Andrew Wiggins. Oh, no, oh, did I mention that name? Sorry
no.
about that.
Oh, no.
How about, I mean, the whole curling aspect where from Einarsson to Jones to Rachel Homan to Sandra Schmerle, who's no longer with us, there have been incredible women's curlers that came out of this country. And people, oh, yeah, Canadian.
A host of U of M students just are going off, and I think they're going to nationals, if I'm not...
You might be correct on... I know the Pandas are going there at some point, but I believe there might be Manitobans going there as well. But again, we're talking about women that have lit up the... Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
We are joined by...
You're sitting at the end of the table.
Yeah, I'm going to...
What are you doing? You're making it so difficult.
We are joined by...
We are joined by
GM Jared.
I always make it difficult when I come on this show. So you know what Gord Downie's favorite team was? The Boston Bruins? Sorry to interrupt you. Why?
Yeah. I don't know why in terms of why. I just know that he was always, that was the team that he always pulled for.
Do you know who his godfather was?
I do not.
Former Bruins GM, Harry Sinden.
Oh. Oh, look at that.
There you go. And he was a Bruins fan because when he started following hockey in the 70s, I think he was about 8 or 9 years old, the Bruins were playing against the Montreal Canadiens. He hated the Canadiens.
Of course.
Cheered for the Bruins.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, there you go.
Well, we're talking about women in sport.
Yes.
So, you're about 2 minutes, 3 minutes too late.
Whatever.
The other name I was going to mention... I know. The other name I was going to mention outside the curling, though, is the woman who basically broke the gender barrier for women's... Or for hockey, period, was Menno Raume. Another monster... Mm-hmm. player in her time, and that's led to many other players who have come along and certainly fall. There have been, again, I think we over-humbleize, if that's not a word, but we're way too polite about the fact that we have some I'll say it, and I know that Jared's gonna give me the eye here. We have some kick-ass women in this country who do amazing things on the field, on the court, on the ice.
Kind of outperforming men in a lot of respects.
We should be talking more about the amazing things they do, and I get that mainstream media, in terms of coverage of these events, maybe we're not that high, maybe we're not that... But, I mean, we're talking about all sorts of different sports as well, whether it be... I know she's on the U.S. team now, but, you know... Kaylee Humphries and Heather Moyse and the amazing work they were doing on the bobsled track. Mm-hmm. We're talking about you know a ton of other athletes that we haven't even mentioned that certainly should be mentioned because the gold rush for Canada when it comes to sports
traditionally,
is good.
Traditionally, female athletes are winning those medals.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where we go, maybe we need to talk about them a little more. I mean, at least on this show, I know we talk a lot about women's hockey, but certainly I think there should be a bigger chunk of discourse about that.
A little bit more coverage, a little bit more money going that way, foster that talent.
You would hope.
A lot more money.
Yes, a lot more.
Equal money at the very least, right?
I would agree, at least equal. I think that in terms of what we're seeing now, though, and I know CBC does a great job at covering amateur sports and certainly some of the stuff that we don't get to see a lot of, and they do a great job of that. I'm not trying to pump CBC compared to everybody else, but the fact that the bigger networks, the two major sporting networks in Canada don't barely give any time to women's sports. I know that, again, people, Rivalry Series is on right now. Okay, great. You show 6 games a year, 5 games a year. Fantastic. What about the rest of the year?
It's pretty brutal.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I know that for people that don't get the full TSN, the all 5 channels, you don't even get to see the Beanpot, which is going to be on later this week. The Beanpot final from the NCAA featuring the women's teams will be on TSN2. Again, if you don't get that channel, you'll never even know it's there.
No.
So,
good on you for shouting it out off the top.
February 5th, yesterday was National Girls and Women in Sports Day, and there needs to be some, again, and I'm not even talking about, we talked about athletes, what about the coaches, what about, you know, the people, Corey, Chevry is assistant coach for Ryerson Men's Hockey. Mm-hmm. Ryerson Men's Hockey, for the first time ever, looks like they may actually get into the top 10. May be a threat in the OUA. Like, that's huge. Good for her. Good for that entire program. But, again, we're not talking about that.
No.
Sarah Hodges, second longest reigning coach in Canada West for women's hockey. Sarah Hodges, who nobody talks about. Again, why is nobody talking about her? Again, this is stuff why I just shake my head at. Yeah. And you guys are sitting there with smiles on your face, but
I was like,
I just came in to talk about Gord Downie. I was
you
in
came
the hall.
To correct us.
No, I didn't come to correct
you.
He came in to set the
record straight and give everybody a little piece of knowledge. I like
there
that.
You go.
We're good with that.
Dropping science.
We're good with that.
Yeah.
Science?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
It's scientific in some way.
Yeah,
we'll just figure out how.
Music sciences. Or
sure.
There you go.
Music research.
All right. Well,
do you want other good news?
Sure.
Bobby Ryan back with the Senators finally. Bobby good. Ryan, for those that don't know, was away, voluntarily checked into the NHL's player assistance program for substance abuse after having a problem on November 20th, finally admitted that he had a problem, finally got back. He's not skating. He won't be appearing in the game. I know when Ottawa's here this weekend or towards the end of the sometime early next week. He won't be part of that. They've already said that he's got to get his legs back, got to get, you know, back into the game, got to figure things out. But he struggled hard after the death of his mom, after his mom passed away. And apparently was in for alcoholism. So let's hope that Bobby Ryan found his way back and certainly is back on, you know, on good terms, good solid ground anyway. Not skating, but he just completed treatment. So huge step forward for Bobby Ryan, and I'm happy to report that he's back skating, back at least in the Senators sort of building and in whatever that is, Canadian Tire Arena now, and at least working out with the team, which is good.
I mean, it's a guy that had a very difficult life growing up. You know, he's moved all around. If nobody's heard of that story before,
Players Tribune has that full. Yeah, go check that out if you want. You want to read
his life basically on the run for a long time.
You want to read a tough story? That's a tough story to read. Like,
Bobby Ryan isn't actually his name.
No.
That's not his real. Well, it is now because he got it changed, but that is not his birth name. And for very good reasons, you know,
hockey was basically his escape from everything
going on. Yeah. And the fact that he made it to the NHL is just a testament to him as a person and as a player.
For those that don't recall, Bobby Ryan was the second overall pick behind Sidney Crosby. So it's not like the kid had no talent.
Didn't he put up 50 goals with the Ducks?
Pretty close.
Yeah. But things kind of...
If not for Brian Burke, it would have been... He would probably have been in a Ducks uniform for a little bit longer, I think.
I could say that's probably
but
true.
But they wouldn't have Jakob Silfverberg, so...
Bobby Ryan and his prime, Jakob Silfverberg. I'm pretty certain I know who I'd go for. But,
yeah.
I mean, then again, we don't know what else would have came out of that, but so Bobby Ryan has some extreme talent there for sure.
And, I mean, he's been, every time, because of the nature of the contract and where he got traded to, any time the trade deadline comes up or Ottawa decides that they're going to rebuild yet again, his name comes up, and that can't be easy for a guy who's playing outside of his natural country. I mean, because he's repped the USA on a number of occasions, right? So, I don't know, obviously, if everything is right now that he's just sort of getting back to his normal hockey life, hopefully they don't try and move him at the trade deadline.
He hasn't played, so I don't think he can. And, I mean, you can move him now because, again, he's been reinstated, but I don't know if any team is going to go, you know what, we got an extra roster spot for a guy who probably won't lace up the skates this year. So
and you know, this is, even if he does come back, this is an Ottawa team that can't score goals. They're struggling
to
score goals.
He can certainly help in that regard.
And I think for him, you know, maybe the end of the year we'll see where things are. Maybe he does want to change the scenery after everything that's gone on, you know, move on with his life, maybe go back to the States. But at this point I think it's best for him and his health just to stay
where he is.
Exactly.
Around the supports that he's sort of built while he's been away from the team.
Worst season for Bobby Ryan in terms of goals, 11 goals. So it's not like the guy can't score. Best seasons, though, obviously we're off the top in terms of where he played with Anaheim, 31, 35, 34, 31. Hasn't reached 30 since, but hit 23 and 22 with the Ottawa Senators. So guy can score. There's no doubt about that. He was instrumental in that run they made in the playoffs a couple years ago in 16-17. Played 19 games, had six goals, 9 assists in the playoffs. Like, guy can play at a high level. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of is he right in the head right now? And it seems like at least coming back at 32 years of age, you hope that maybe there's some gas left in the tank there for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, good for Bobby Ryan. Other news in terms of good mental health. Jordan Tutu in the city this week, doing a lot of mental health talks and a lot of talking about mental health awareness and health and wellness. Excuse me, in terms of getting that going. So I want to say if Jordan's out there listening, and probably not, but if he is,
you never know.
Jordan Tutu, welcome to Winnipeg and welcome back to Winnipeg, and certainly keep doing the great work you're doing because you're an inspiration to many people.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that in hockey that really has helped. You know, there's a lot of debate about the Bell Let's Talk thing and. You know, how? Right, why do we have a telecom doing this for us? Well, he's kind of one of those athletes, those guys out there that's really done a lot of good for the hockey community and for helping to fight against the stigma over mental health and mental health treatment. He's just been really a poster child for why this is so important and, you know, that it can happen to anybody.
And again, like Bobby Ryan, tough upbringing. Literally went to hell and back in terms of his life when he lost his brother. Kind of was saved in Nashville in terms of David Poile and Barry Trotz. They're sort of, you know, pulling him out of the darkness and getting him help. And then, he's been, Brian McGrattan was huge, a huge help to him as well. Kudos to Brian Gratton. I know we had him on the show a couple of years back, but Brian McGrattan in terms of just, you know, straightening the kid up and getting him to find some help was huge. And now, he's one of the best advocates for it out there. So.
Great thing about Tutu as well is that he has made it kind of his mission to reach out to Indigenous communities. He's done a lot of work going up north and talking about mental health and sort of safe outs and how to cope. And I mean, it's systemic up there, and there are lots and lots of problems, and things get swept under the rug and. You know, he's been really, really good at going out there and engaging in those communities.
Well, and has made himself available to those communities whenever they need him. Like, that's I think the part that people don't realize is that, like, I know his home base is in Kelowna. Like, he lives in Kelowna in terms of where him and his wife and his family live. Mm-hmm. But, like, he's on the road all the time going to these communities and just checking in, just stopping in and visiting and making sure that people are doing okay. And you don't hear that a lot because, again, people just sort of go, oh, he's coming to our community. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's going unannounced to these places and just sort of checking in is it does a world of good that people don't even hear about. So
the memorial tournament for his brother that they have in their hometown is it's a massive event every single year. He is
bigger and bigger every year. Like, it's crazy.
He's an icon in those communities.
They just named a rink after him, I believe, as well.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
In their hometown.
Brand new rink that was built.
Just that the fact that he's taking that, he's not shying away from it. He's not using it for any self-gain. He's just taking it and he's turning it back towards his community and saying, I will help you. And I'm here. If I can make it, you can make it too.
So from the good. GM, you can stay for this one, GM Jared, because
you're going to talk about the bad?
No, there is a bad story to talk about here, though. Brad Hunter published this yesterday in the Toronto Star, February 5th edition of the Toronto Star. His name may not ring any bells, but Brandon Christian is a name that probably should be mentioned. Brandon Christian's hockey career and life ended on Sunday. With a police bullet. He was at his estranged wife's house in St. George, Quebec, with a hockey stick, standing out front, screaming and yelling and basically not in a good place. He had been married for 15 years, but the couple clearly having problems in terms of what went on. The police showed up, and basically they chased him for a little bit before putting 8 bullets into him. Brandon Christian, for those that don't know him, and you don't even have to look him up, he was one of those rough and tumble, I'll do anything I can to stay in the show kind of guys. Fought a lot. He played with the Johnston Chiefs for a while. He had 7 goals and 12 assists in his first year. 39 games, 226 penalty minutes. It only got worse from there. At 31, he went to the North American Hockey League, where everybody knows is an unbelievably brutal hockey league when it comes to penalties and certainly enforcers. 38 games in 2005-2006, he had 399 penalty minutes. So this is not a guy who avoided contact when it came to what went on. I'm shocked, And again, maybe it's different. I don't know what the culture is like in Quebec in terms of mental health and mental health awareness. I'm shocked that somebody just didn't recognize the fact that he was having a mental health breakdown right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me points directly to mental health when the guy is out front of his estranged wife's house swinging a stick and being aggressive towards people that are around him.
Yeah.
When he was married for 15 years, I don't think that doesn't really fit the pattern in terms of where he got in. And I get that things are deteriorating, things are getting worse for mm-hmm. him. But again, this would lead me to believe instantly that this is a mental health issue, not a guy who's just off his rocker. Like, off his rocker is a terrible term to use, but a guy who's just angry for the sake of being angry.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing you need to, in a domestic violence situation or a domestic situation like that where you don't exactly know, you need to take certain steps to ensure that that the other person is all right. But I totally agree that, like, this should not have ended in violence. I think there needs to be something else, a certain step that was taken to de-escalate the situation properly, so right. we didn't wind up with somebody passing away.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm not sure what happened. Like, mm-hmm. they don't give any details as to what the confrontation between the police and Brandon Christian were or was in terms of how they interacted, what went on, what caused the chase, what caused the... And again, if you're swinging the stick at the cops, I understand that they're just trying to protect themselves. But there's more and more belief now that, to calm the guy down, at least just incapacitate him first. And then if he's still going to... If he's repeatedly violent after that, and you have to use lethal force, but incapacitate the guy at least, mm-hmm. and then find out what's going on with him. Because to me, this sounds entirely like we've heard about every other CTE/concussion case where guys have progressively gotten worse and more violent as they age because of the CTE mm-hmm. issue.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, I mean, you talk about the type of player that he was, and obviously did not shy away from being physical, getting into fights. And, there's this common belief across professional sport. Specifically, I mean, you look at a lot of the stuff, unfortunately, that's happened in the NFL. And a lot of teams are now employing psychologists and more professionals who can look at checking in with their players and helping them to sort of turn that switch off when they're not on the field. And, I mean, obviously this guy didn't play in the NHL, and he did, maybe some of these teams...
Highest he got was a tryout for the American Hockey League.
But, some of the teams in the lower minor leagues that are playing in probably don't have the same sort of resources as... But, I mean, you started talking about a guy like Bobby Ryan. He started to go down a bit of a dark path. He had people on his side who could identify that, pull him out of that situation, and get him the help that he needed. Guy like Tutu as well, right? Going down a bad path, you pull him out of it. And it's unfortunate that some of these guys, they don't get the support that they need. They don't get the help that they need. And when you make a living with your fists, at a certain point, it's all you know, right? Mm-hmm. And it becomes instinct, and it becomes... to when the blood starts to boil and things start to escalate for you, you do what you know, right? You put up your hands, or you act in a violent fashion.
No, I agree. I'm not defending the fact that that he was violent at that point. Mm-hmm. Again, he's doing what he knows instinctually in terms of getting...
Because of CTE, right, the pathway is gone.
Has been changed.
The reaction is not... do these sequence of steps, it flips and it goes this way.
So, but my question is, if it took you 8 bullets to put him down, like, maybe a taser wasn't enough, maybe incapacitating wasn't enough, but that's a ton of lethal force to use against one individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this guy clearly needed some help somewhere. And I get it, the police aren't responsible for that. The police have their own responsibilities. But we're talking about taking a life now that... maybe didn't have to. If the guy, and again, I reflect back on the conversation we have with Jeremy Allingham about Stephen Pete, about him living in his truck and waking up every day with headaches and waking going to bed every day with headaches and not knowing how to solve that problem and not being able to think clearly because there's always a headache going on. Like, I wonder if Brandon Christian had the same sort of, you know, CTE symptom. That
I can almost guarantee you he did.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is that, like, no, and again, maybe people, I'm sure the cops must have known who he was because they were at his estranged wife's house. But you would think that there would be some recognition that, okay, this guy was who he was. Maybe we need to handle this with a softer touch on this one.
Yeah, and I guess, though, the thing that you can't ever really do is you can't put yourself in the shoes of the police, right? And you hear about systemic violence or overuse of force coming from the law across all walks of life, all society. You can count on two hands the number of incidents that have happened in Winnipeg in this last year, right? I mean, I live a block and a half away from a 7-Eleven where a 16-year-old kid got 6 or 7 bullets.
But,
right?
But I agree. I'm not trying to demonize the police in this.
No, neither am I. But it's like
they're rolling up to this situation, and all they know is that there's somebody having some sort of episode, or there's somebody standing outside of their estranged wife's house
swinging a hockey stick,
yelling at people. They're coming into this knowing that there's the possibility of violence.
Yeah.
And they're going to react accordingly to protect themselves and protect the people in that house.
Which, unfortunately,
and I 100% agree that they should. Like that, I'm not. There's no debate about that. Mm-hmm. But again, what I'm like rolling up, they have to get the information, obviously, from the dispatch about who called, what's going on, all that. Like, I would hope, and again, this is completely conjecture in terms of what I'm hoping for, but I would hope that they have some recognition as to who this guy is. Like, this is okay. Brandon was an enforcer in hockey. Like, we know he's a hockey player. I don't know what's going on with him. We haven't heard from him. We don't know anything about him. We know this can't be the first incident that he's had, though. Mm-hmm. If the police are responding in force, like, there has to be the build up towards CTE. You just don't fall off a cliff. It gets worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. As we saw, as you mentioned, in terms of the NFL, some of these guys sort of building and building and building, and finally they just that's it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, the number of domestic violence incidents involving players, and these are just the ones that are reported, right?
Yeah,
you seem to hear at least one or two or five or six really, really bad incidents, and it's whether it's players, there's stuff with coaches, there's and I mean, people talk about a culture around football and a culture around hockey.
Yeah.
Right?
The machismo,
And it's unfortunate, but like I said, it's good that some teams, more progressive teams, seem to be recognizing that and seem to be putting measures in place to help with these sorts of scenarios, provided that they catch them.
Right.
And that's great, but we talked about Jordan Tutu and Bobby Ryan and the guys that got help before it got too bad. We're doing a good job of recognizing it now, but we can't forget those who came before.
But the thing that kills me, though, and this is the part that maybe is the hardest, and this is demonizing the NHL and the NHLPA for this, because I think that they're not responsible for Brandon Christian's death, but for the problems that we're seeing with some of the older players is that you have to ask for help in order to get help. They cannot provide it without you asking for it, and they will not seek you out to make sure you're doing okay.
Well, and I mean,
and that to me as a PA, and I get the Alumni Association, Glenn Healy's worked really hard to try and change some of this stuff. And again, don't get me wrong, I hated Glenn Healy as a player. He was awful in terms of being a netminder. I'm sure he's gonna, if he ever hears this, he'll absolutely excoriate me. But Glenn Healy, in terms of the Alumni Association, has done wonders for that association. Yeah. And I really wish there was an intermediate step where I get the Alumni Association can't force themselves upon a player, but have an intermediate to go and check on these players who's an independent third party.
And, I mean, it's interesting you bring that up because it's sort of very prominent story that TSN covered was Joe Murphy and what went on with him, right? And it wasn't his family that sort of intervened. It was Trevor Kidd
was one of the...
Right? And, I mean,
and I've spoken to him, and he said, it was heartbreaking to see him in that condition.
And as far as I know, like, Trevor Kidd and Joe Murphy never played together.
Not together on a team, but they crossed paths enough in terms of the Battle of Alberta.
Sure, it's interesting in that there is that sort of fraternal order of the brotherhood of people who have gone through the same battles and being, you know, nobody knows what it's like to be a professional hockey player unless you're a professional hockey player.
Right.
And, you know, you see things and you go through things that nobody else, the common folk, aren't going to experience, right? And so to see players looking out for other players who they hear a rumor that Murphy's down on his luck and Trevor Kidd's in his truck and he's on his way to Thunder Bay or to Kenora, right? Just to check in on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, when Kidd spoke to us, he, not on this show, but spoke to us privately at an event, he said it probably took them a good 2 days to even locate him.
Yeah.
And you just go, how does a guy like Joe Murphy just fade into the background in a town like Kenora where there's only, you know, again, in the summer, there's a lot more people there. But how does he fade into the background so easily when people don't even... But again, Joe Murphy doesn't look like Joe Murphy like he did 20, 30 years ago. So it's easier for him just to sort of get lost in the crowd now.
Also, it's a homelessness issue where people just... You just stop seeing it because you're conditioned to not see it, to not draw attention to it, to put it out of sight, out of mind.
But yeah, so Trevor Kidd said it was the hardest thing to find him. And then when they did find him... It didn't go well. Like, it went well enough that they could talk, but it didn't go well enough for him to seek help.
I think one of the things that you've seen, again, across professional leagues is, you know, people talk a lot about how these guys are getting paid exorbitant amounts of money to whack a puck into the net or to hit a ball or to shoot a basket or to get a football across a goal line, right? But I think that what you're seeing with the current generation of athletes is that they are maybe a lot more aware and they're in a lot better position than guys 15, 20, 25, 50 years ago were. And so some of these young players from this generation are making it their goal to look out for the guys who didn't have the same pension situation, didn't have the same supports in place. And, I mean, you see it especially a lot in football where the NFLPA was horrible in treating their former players. And that one, you see tons and tons of people who are suffering from post-concussion CTE stuff. And so
they've actually admitted it, though. And where the NHL falls flat on its face because now they're hiring people to basically double down on the fact that, no, we're not responsible.
Well, and see, that's ridiculous.
That's a whole show on its own. I get that.
That infuriates me.
Yeah, that me too.
But at least you have maybe a little bit of progress being made by these current players who are pushing it.
And guys looking out for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, there are guys that are leaving football in the prime of their careers, guys leaving like the UFC
in the prime of their careers. Luck last year, right?
Yeah, saying, I made my money. I want to have a future. I want to be able to hold, like, recognize my children's faces.
No.
I'm done.
No.
There was a guy, I can't recall his name, the player from the Carolina Panthers.
Oh, Luke Kuechly.
Yes, Kuechly, that's it. Who
he's like,
just said, I'm done. I'm no.
28 years old, prime of his career.
I'm done. I want nothing.
Playing at a super high level, pro bowler, and just walked away.
I mean,
good on him.
I will, and as much as it sucks to say this, I would rather see Andrew Luck playing. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's a fantastic quarterback. But if your body says no, if you feel like no, that's probably, you're probably leaning in the right direction already.
Yeah. Like, if you're asking yourself those questions.
Right.
Right.
If that's the first thing, if you wake up in the morning and that's the first thing on your mind is, do I feel like going to work today as a professional football player? You probably need to reevaluate where you are in your in your career.
But the problem is that as somebody who gets to playing at the ultimate level, right, you have been conditioned your entire life, right? You are playing to reach that goal, and then all of a sudden you reach the top of the mountain and it gets taken away from you, and you know that you need to walk away, but everything within you, you've been conditioned to play football.
But like you said, though, the guys now are far more educated about the entire situation.
Sure.
I think that that's the benefit, is that by drawing more light to this as much as we can, this will make, as hard as it is to walk away, this will make walking away a much more palatable solution to a lot of these guys who are maybe fighting the urge to stay in the game despite the fact that their vision's a little fuzzy, or they have tinnitus in their ears, or they wake up with a headache every day.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's a number of different factors as to why guys are staying too, right?
Oh, sure.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, the financial problems, and you look at the number of...
That's why you see boxers just keep going and going and going and going, because they need to fight to keep that life, to just...
To keep the paycheck. Not only to keep the lifestyle, but to keep the lifestyle for the 10 or 12 people around them as well, right?
I can't remember the quote, but it was like, it was either a boxer or a UFC fighter where, like, you make that money, the amount of money you spend a year changes.
Yeah.
You know, that money doesn't, you know, you're not spending the same as you were when you were making $50,000 a year.
When you're the undercard.
Yeah. You're spending like you're a champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great documentary about that called Greed. It was an ESPN 30 for 30, talking about players just squandering colossal amounts of money.
I mean, Johnny Depp, the famous story of all the things that he bought, and the fact that he had to keep going with the Pirates of the Caribbean movies because he just had to pay for all these things.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Anyways.
I know you got to get out of here. Yeah, we'll let you get going.
Have a good show. Are you going to talk about Buff?
No, we are not. It's on the show preview. Do not bring up Buff until Buff speaks. There's only one side of the story out there right now, and that's if you're making accusations or judgments based upon what is coming from one side, you're missing the other half of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Buff has his own story. Buff will tell his own story.
It's Buff.
Well, Buff can do whatever he wants. I mean, he's Buff, right? Yeah. But before you start chucking stones in glass houses, Wait for the other guy to actually say something.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, at the very least, it looks like it's going to reach some sort of amicable end between the teams.
I don't think there's ever been any animosity between Kevin Cheveldayoff, between the two parties that are involved, Cheveldayoff and Buff. I think that the issue became bigger when the NHLPA stepped in, and the NHL stepped in, and then, okay, now we're going to drive a wedge between these two because we got to try and come up with some sort of legal precedent to make this happen. Okay, whoa, slow down. Let's figure out what we're doing here.
I mean, if the PA and NHL had not stepped in, I think this would have been handled a long time ago. Chevy and Buff would have sat down in a room, made a decision, and then it would have been done.
Yeah. And the suspension is only because he didn't come to training camp.
Yes, of course.
But again, that could be resolved in a heartbeat just by a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, of course. And I mean, I like the guy. I've always liked the guy. I like the way he plays. I like his whole sort of laid-back demeanor. He seems like a good guy. He seems like the sort of guy I'd like to go have a beer with. And whatever he decides,
if he decides that hockey is, he's done with hockey, more power to him.
Sure. And if he decides that he's done playing hockey in Winnipeg, and next year he decides he wants to go play somewhere else,
more power to him.
Good for him.
Exactly.
Good for him. I'd just like to see the Jets find some sort of resolution with this
There is a resolution, but it's a matter
get some
of but
players it's a matter- or to do something this year to.
But because Buff hasn't said a word,
I know.
People are now, well, obviously, you know, he held them hostage because he's the guy holding out for the money. Well, no, that's not entirely true. I'm not saying you, but there were some pretty wild accusations that were made on social media the last couple of days, and I just go, hold, you don't even, like, we don't even know where Buff is right now. He could be in Minnesota. He could be, you know, in Timbuktu. We don't know where he is at this point.
Also, odds are he doesn't get anything from this.
Right, and that's the thing, is that the grievance sound like they were going to lose that.
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, like, if I'm Buff, yeah, I'm keeping my mouth shut right now until I get at least get paid, because if I say anything that goes against what's going on,
oh yeah, no,
kaboom, there goes my case.
No, all right. So, well, I'm sorry I brought it up.
That's okay.
No, you didn't want to talk about it.
That's okay. I would hang, if you were a phone caller, I would have hung up on you at that point. So, there goes GM Jared. Like always, glad to have him along. We're gonna play the quick legal ID, folks. It's 11 seconds, so don't go anywhere because Jason, I'll be right back. We've got a lot of Bison hockey to talk in a few seconds here. Be right back here after Legal ID on the Hockey Show, 101.5 UMFM.
C for combat, J for jungle, U for uranium, M for mutant. Hey, hey, hey!
CJUM 101.5, campus and community radio with a great sense of urgency. Hey, hey, hey.
15 minutes to go on the show, folks. Glad to have you along with us here on 101.5 UMFM. It is the Hockey Show. Jason, let's get into men's hockey because...
Don't worry, I've been watching.
Bison men's hockey, 3 weeks ago, had a chance to clinch a playoff spot. Bison men's hockey decided to lose 5-4 to Regina in a shootout after leading 3-0 in the first period that you were in a game you were calling. Yep. Only to lay an egg on the fall on the Saturday following by a 6-3 score. No clinch at that point.
Nope.
So, okay, no big deal. They get to go into UBC 1 week earlier, again, where they could have clinched by knocking at least Regina out of the playoffs had they won 2 games in UBC. Drop a 6-2 game on Friday and lost 2-1 in overtime on Saturday, again, not helping their cause 3 weeks ago. So 3 weeks ago, they lose to UBC. They get 1 point. 2 weeks ago, they lose to Regina, only getting 1 point. Regina and somehow survives and wins, because, again, they beat Manitoba. Survives and wins, moves up the standings. UBC, because they win, survives, moves up the standings, because they beat the team they're chasing. That should tell you a lot right there. They go into Saskatchewan, or they get Saskatchewan. Again, games look like they were fairly competitive. Look like they were fairly exciting.
They were very close.
Manitoba ends up on the wrong side again.
It was the same problem we've seen for a few years now. We thought that they were past this. We thought that they had outgrown this, but it's just at the wrong times, there's a defensive breakdown, and somebody loses somebody, or somebody lets somebody sneak through, and it's done.
Manitoba currently 0-3-3 in their last six. They're currently 2-5-3 since the December break. Only Lethbridge's 0-8-2 record in the second half is worse. Is Manitoba a playoff team? Do they make it? More importantly, should they make it based upon the way they're playing?
I think it's hard to say. Like, you know, the defense, like, it's basically the forward core that I have the issue with. The defense are playing, you know, some of the guys are punching.
Henry was looked like all-star material.
Adam Henry and Sean Christensen are as good as they've always been. Adam Henry basically puts that team on his back. He played, I think, 99% of the power plays, did not come off the ice. He was put out there for minutes at a time.
Strictly to score goals.
Yeah.
or at least set up goals.
Exactly. Then Tyler Brown and Riley Lamb, just fantastic, holding their team in the game, making timely saves. Tyler Brown especially, making some fantastic saves, like highlight-worthy saves to keep his team in those games. It's just that the forward core, for some reason, they just don't... They love going... And that's the conversation we had on Hear the Herd on Tuesday. It's like, when they go one way, they go one way. That's why the Bisons have given up the most shorthanded goals in the conference right now, because when they're in the offensive zone, they forget that there's another end of the ice where things happen.
They're literally like a nuclear-powered submarine. They go in one direction, and then if they have to come back, it's the slow, long turn.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's exactly what it feels like. Supremely talented players, like guys that if they just flip that switch, can take all the skills that they have and all of the things they do right offensively, flip those around, like getting in lanes, having good hands, good positioning, physicality, flip those to the defensive zone, and this team is unbeatable. But for some reason, that flip just doesn't happen.
They need, and I hate to say this, because looking at their record, they need 2 points.
They've needed 2 points for 3 weeks now.
2 points to clinch a playoff spot. They need three points to clinch fifth place. Regardless, they're going to Calgary one way or the other to play either the Dinos or the Mount Royal Cougars. UBC has Mount Royal in Mount Royal this weekend. It'll be tough. In UBC this weekend. It'll be a tough game for them, but they may come out okay. Regina and Saskatchewan play home and home.
Mm-hmm.
With Manitoba going into Claire Drake Arena, do they get any points this weekend?
No.
Okay. With Regina going into Merlis Belcher Place, do they get any points this weekend?
Possibly, yes.
Okay. And then playing at home, do they beat Saskatchewan there?
I think playing home against Saskatchewan, they have a chance, especially with Sam Brew up. There's been no one. I have no idea.
Not,
there's no one.
Not with Lightning
on.
Goal scorer Taryn Kozin in
there? Maybe. I just know for a fact that when the Bisons go into Edmonton, bad things happen.
Yeah. Doesn't matter whether it's men or women. It's Claire Drake is where dreams go to die. And then UBC, do they beat Mount Royal?
The way Mount Royal's playing, it's going to be a fight, but they have a chance.
Of those three teams, in your opinion, having seen them all year, which team misses the playoffs?
I gotta say Manitoba at this point. The way that the second half has gone, like they're running out of runway.
Well, yeah, true. I mean, they ran out of runway 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago.
I mean, last week.
This was the worst situation because we talked about this. I don't know how long ago, maybe middle of or early January when you were on the show. Mm-hmm. They had to beat UBC and Regina in order to basically clinch a playoff spot, yeah. Which they didn't do before running into the second best and the best team in the conference, not to mention the third best and the best team in the mm-hmm. nation.
So coming into last weekend, Saskatchewan was on a 7-game win streak. They're on a 9-game win streak now.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously Alberta's Alberta, right? Like you needed those wins. And for some, like at this point, if you can't win those games, you don't deserve to win those games.
I mean, they did beat Alberta earlier in the season. Credit
but
to Manitoba.
They were at home.
But they were at home where they had last chance to get the players on they wanted.
And they have a record about equal with Alberta when they come here.
Yeah. And then when they go to Claire Drake, it's like Owen, like forever.
Yeah.
So that's going to be tough. It might be. I was going back trying to look at this today. I don't have any stats on it because I didn't go through everything and I wasn't the top of my list in terms of what I was looking at. This might be the first time both men's and women's hockey for both Lethbridge and Manitoba missed the playoffs in the same year. I can't find any other year where Manitoba and Lethbridge both missed the playoffs in both men's and women's hockey.
I mean, the men have a chance to still make it.
The men have a chance to certainly put up something. Whether or not they do is a different story, so we'll see what happens there. Women are out officially after UBC won. They also eliminated Lethbridge last week based on tiebreaker scenarios. Mm-hmm. Lethbridge can catch UBC and Mount Royal, but holds a tiebreaker for neither of them. So it's
that's
over.
Reset.
Yeah. Hey now, don't dream it's over. But both Manitoba and Lethbridge out. It looks like if Alberta can get 1 point against the Bisons this weekend in women's hockey, they clinch first place and home ice advantage.
So they're going to clinch first place and home ice advantage?
It points to yes,
okay.
I'm going to say.
Okay.
Calgary has to. This is the weird. Here's the big part. Calgary women's hockey has to keep pace with Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan holds the tiebreaker and is 1 point behind. So Calgary, who plays, who are they playing this weekend? Calgary, who plays Lethbridge, I believe. No, is that right? Yeah, Lethbridge. Yeah. Calgary plays Lethbridge. Has to keep pace with whatever Saskatchewan does against Regina. If they tie, Saskatchewan earns the higher ranking. Saskatchewan's 4-0 against them this year. Like, that's not a matchup. If I'm in third or second, if I'm Saskatchewan, again, you're going to probably meet Calgary at some point.
Yeah.
But that is not a game I want to go into if I'm in Merlis Belcher Place, if I'm Calgary.
Yeah. And this is a Saskatchewan team that knows how to win, and they've done it, and they're a playoff team. Like, they're a team that's built to grind out wins in the playoffs.
Absolutely. The rest of the situation, there's a whole bunch of tiebreakers that could happen based upon where Regina, Mount Royal, and UBC are. I'm suspecting, and again, this is just me going off of what I know, again, there's going to be points put up regardless of what happens because Mount Royal and UBC play each other, that eventually when it all settles out, that Regina may end up being sixth. After having a great run to get back into the mm-hmm. playoff run, they've kind of hit the skids, and only because they play Saskatchewan this weekend, who know they have to win.
Yeah.
So Regina may end up going to Calgary or to Saskatchewan, despite them not wanting to do that.
Yeah.
And then that would set up, again, a fourth versus fifth would be a rematch of the final week of the season, UBC and Mount Royal.
Build up some hate.
Yeah, so let's get that going, have some fun there. One of the weird things, though, and we were talking about this, I know, earlier in the week, Jason, but Lethbridge, their fall from grace has been nothing but short of spectacular this season.
But expected.
Yeah. Trending that way, yes. So in week six, they were tied for first place after 10 games. They had 19 points. They were tied with UBC, which is also... UBC took a spectacular fall through the standings as well. But today they are seventh place. After 26 games, they have just 28 points. They've gained 9 points in 16 games. Here's where things get crazy, though. Lethbridge, since the December break, since 2015 and 2016, okay, now 5 years of play, since 2015, 2016, after the December break starting January 1st, Lethbridge has a record of 740-4-7. They've earned 36 points in 5 seasons of play in the second half. That's 58 games worth of play, plus two to go. There's still two more this weekend. Of 174 possible points, they've gained 36. Their points percentage for those 5 years is a measly 0.207. And to make matters even worse, if you take out 2015-2016, where they went 3-7-2-0, they dropped to 433-2-7 in the last 4 seasons.
How do you do that when you have Alicia Anderson in goal?
In 46 games for 138 points, they earned 23 points in 4 seasons. They have a points percentage of 0.167 in the second half over the last 4 seasons. That's almost impossible when almost every game, there's 3 points available in every game. Yeah. You should be able to earn more than 23 points in out of 138 possible points.
The second half, they got 9 points. Like that's 3 wins. That's all.
The second half, they don't even have that. They're 1-7-1-1 right now. That's 3-5-6 points right now.
That's 2 wins.
Since January 1st, they are 1-7-1-1 with 2 games to go against Calgary.
They can double their second half points total this weekend.
I dove into the numbers a little bit further. Maybe it's a goaltending thing. I thought maybe Anderson, maybe she's tired. She plays a lot of games. She has the Canada West record for most minutes played out of any goaltender that's ever played. Maybe she's exhausted in the second half. She plays a lot anyway. She was 7-6-1 before December. Okay, they play 16 games before December. She played in 14 of them. Okay, 7-6-1 before December.
Didn't even know Lethbridge had a backup.
227 goals against average and a .930 save percentage. Decent numbers. She's in it. She's battling. Chloe Marshall picked up the other two. The former Saskatchewan netminder who transferred to Lethbridge picked up the other two games. I think she went 1-1. But hey, they're in the race. They're in the playoff race. No big deal. Since December, Anderson has gone 2-7-1 with a .276 goals against average and a .904 save percentage.
Still not above 90%?
That drop, though, in save percentage is precipitous when you think they're adding an extra half goal per game to their whenever she's in net. Mm-hmm. That's insanity. A half goal every 60 minutes compared to what they were doing before. Okay, so maybe it's a defensive thing. Maybe it's a defense thing. Maybe it's an issue with the... This looks like more of a team issue, as the offense in the first 16 games scored 3 or more goals in 6 of 16 games. Okay? Mm-hmm. Remember, 7-6-1. In 6 of 16 games, they scored 3 or more goals. They allowed 2 or less in 9 of those 16 games.
Typical
great.
Alicia Anderson hockey.
Solid work, exactly. No questions there. Defense is showing up. Goalies providing a wall. Post-December this season... They've scored 3 or more goals now in only two of 10 games. So the offense has taken a dive, but they've allowed 3 or more in 5 of 10 games they've played in the second half. Where the hell did the defense go?
What, do you have the shot differences? Like what? How many saves has she been?
I don't have the full stats. I didn't print out the full stats. I had that though, but. Like, she's making a ton of saves.
Yeah.
Like, we already know she's making a ton of saves. She already holds the save record. She's basically almost doubled it this season. Like, she's way out in front of everybody. Like, she's making a ton of saves. And again, her save percentage is reflective of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you go 2-7-1 after starting the season 7, or whatever they were, 8-7-1 on the season.
And the fact that it's a common problem and it happens
but every... 5 years, exactly.
The fact that it happens, what is it?
They didn't win a game. 2017-2018, they didn't win a game in the second half. They went 0-9-0-3.
Did they just forget how to play hockey after Christmas?
They have not won more. In the last 4 years, they have not won more than two regulation wins and one overtime win in any of the seasons. I don't understand this.
Like
you said, they have the best goalie in the conference, by far the most athletic goalie in the conference.
Endurance.
And this is insane in terms of seeing this. I don't know what happened.
How can you just not accidentally score a goal?
And we can't blame it on coaching because they've changed coaches.
Yeah.
It's not like the coaching, the system they put in the first half didn't work. They were in a playoff spot.
They were leading the conference.
At one point they were. And now you get to the end of the season and you've missed it. Alicia Anderson never saw the playoffs once in her career.
Yeah. That is a travesty.
Trisha Van Varenberg, who was constantly their offensive force, never got a sniff of the playoffs once in her entire 5-year history at that school. What the hell is going on in Lethbridge?
Like, I want to be around that team just to see what changes in practice, what changes with the players, what goes on after that holiday break that just... Like, are courses that difficult in the University of Lethbridge that it's just sucking all the energy and time from these players where they're like,
I
got to focus on school because I got to ditch hockey for focusing on school because I want to graduate? Or is it like, I honestly want to know the answer of like, what happened? Why?
I'll have to maybe sit down with one of these players at some point and go through this, because this is not... I have no way of explaining this. Like I said, I've gone through the stats over and over and over trying to find some sort of conclusive piece. Like, maybe there was an injury, a significant injury to a player. Maybe, you know, something happened, or, you know, something... And again, I know the whole Michelle Janis thing was going on, but maybe something significant happened. But again...
You have Alicia Anderson.
You can't be...
You're starting
good
in front.
You can't be this good in the first half and this bad in the second half when you took 1 month off for exams.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense, so I don't know. To those players graduating out in Lethbridge, honestly, you guys are incredible, because if this was me, I'd be pulling all my hair out.
I would have quit. I would have left. If that was going on, I'd be like, okay, when can I transfer out of here?
Either way, I don't have an answer. We'll go over a little bit. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this weekend if you're going to be listening to the games on 101.5 UMFM. Saturday's game is on live on the radio between Alberta and Manitoba. Don't come expecting a win. Come expecting fun, but don't expect a win. We will be honoring Jordy Zacharias and Amanda Schubert. I have some of their stats here, but I'll leave that for the weekend because these are some pretty cool stats. We're going to be honoring them as they're the graduating players for this year, so happy to say... I got to see them play because they are pretty incredible and certainly great human beings, and love being around them, and hopefully they'll continue on and be part of the long tradition of alumni coming back and supporting this team.
We have been spoiled with the caliber of players we've gotten to see the last couple years.
Absolutely. So happy to have that. We're going to get out of here, though, right away. Free Range Radio, Skippy coming up right away. I got to get out of here because we're cutting into his time. In saying that, thanks for joining us here on The Hockey Show. Again, tune in this weekend, Friday night. It'll be on the second stream. It'll be live on 101.5 UMFM on Saturday in terms of that. It'll be the final game of the season because, again, the Bisons aren't going to make the playoffs, unfortunately, but... looking forward, there's going to be some great players coming in. We'll talk a little bit about them as well on the program. Happy to have you with us tonight, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Jason, thanks for coming in. Anything you want to promote before we get out?
Not really. Just some stories coming up for the Manitoban. Isaiah's talking to Jeremy Leipzig. I'll have the recap for women's
Jeremy
hockey this weekend.
Leipzig.
And there's going to be some great basketball in the next couple months. The men's team.
Still ranked number 9 in the nation or number 10?
Well, they're number 9 in the nation right now, and they're chasing down a conference championship and potentially a national championship.
There we go. Good for Kirby Shep there. And the kids out in the basketball program. With that, though, folks, we're out of here for another week. Take care. We'll see you next week here on The Hockey Show. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in on 101.5 UMFM.